What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the One Man's Opinion Podcast. I am your host, Noah Gillian. So happy you decided to join in today. It is the 16th of May, 2022. We are here today to recap some of the recent developments taking place among the Philadelphia sports teams. It's been a few weeks since the previous episode, and in that time, we've had plenty to break down. So we will be going in depth on those teams. Joining the show today is longtime contributor to the podcast, Connor Laverty. Welcome back, Con. What's going on?
What's up? Good to be back. I've been better, though, that's for sure, as a Philly sports fan.
Yeah, there's been some reasons to be pessimistic. But before we get started, if you want to find us on social media, you can find me on Twitter at Noah Gillian. You can find the show's account at OneMansOpinion17. And you can find Connor at Connor_Lav21. Also, if you would, please drop a 5-star review on the platform you're listening on. Help us reach new audiences and continue to grow all together. So without further ado, let's just get right into it. And starting off, we'll talk about the team which had the most recent end to their season. And that is the Philadelphia 76ers getting bounced in the second round in consecutive seasons, this time at the hands of the number one seeded Miami Heat. A lot to talk about in terms of the Philadelphia 76ers here. Arguably no bigger storyline than James Harden and his performance in the closeout game six. Had a super up and down series, ended up the playoffs in general, averaging 18.5 points, 8.5 assists, 5 rebounds, but only shot 40% from the field, 37% from three. So it was pretty interesting to see some of his numbers. Definitely not what we've been accustomed to of late. Only took 13 field goal attempts per game is what he was averaging throughout the playoffs, and only 6 free throws. So definitely a dip in volume for James Harden after, you know, obviously he's been one of the best scorers of the 21st century, and if not NBA history. So, you know, if I'll swing it to you, Con, talking about this, is this a disappointment from James Harden, or what's the feeling on James Harden? Because he does have the player option going into next season for $47 million. So, you know, what's the future hold for James Harden in Philadelphia?
Well, it was definitely a disappointment. There's no way to say it wasn't. As far as what the future holds in Philadelphia, Daryl just came out the other day and said that he's going to be here. We know James isn't going to decline $47 million, especially when you know no other team's going to give it to him after what we just saw from him. He's going to be here, and at the end of the day, I'm not mad about it. I mean, we gave up a guy who was never going to play another game for us for a former MVP. And we did see this year that he is not that guy anymore. And that's upsetting. But at the same time, he's still an all-star. He's still a very talented basketball player. He just he didn't get it done, and he wasn't good enough. I think it really started with his aggressiveness. I don't think his aggression was near where it needed to be, especially when you look at how banged up Embiid is. I mean, When you have a healthy Embiid who's playing at the MVP level that he has been for the past 2 years, and he's 100%, Harden might be able to get away with deferring a little bit and not being as aggressive, right? But when you get into the playoffs, into the second round of the playoffs, and then you factor in Embiid's got a broken eye, he's got a torn ligament in his thumb, and he's tripping over his own feet in game seven, you just have to be more assertive as that next option, and he wasn't. So that was upsetting to see, but we got to bring him back. We have to. I mean,
yeah, there's no doubt. There's no doubt you got to bring him back. That was one thing that I was saying too when we were breaking down the trade initially. Was one of the things that I was saying was I think that their window, you know, for a championship, at least I was arguing, was going to be better next year. One of the things that we were citing there was I just thought like a full off season, in Philadelphia, you know, a chance to reshape the roster more for James Harden's skill set and where he is now, as opposed to the team being pretty much fit for Ben Simmons, you know, running the point guard position. So, you know, I think an offseason of that, and as well as, you know, seeing how he fit into the offense and what adjustments they can make over long term, I thought was going to be crucial, because, you know, you insert someone midseason, you know, very rarely in the terms of the magnitude James Harden's going to possess the ball. Like, he's going to have the ball in his hand every time down. Pretty much took it out of Tyrese Maxey's hands. But you have that, you have that little time frame where you can see what happens, you can make some adjustments. But it's really never been, you know, like a huge player making that kind of change and, you know, seamlessly fitting in there. At least not one I can think of off the top of my head. So, you know, I do think they're going to be better next year in terms of their efficiency. And, you know, I think James Harden's going to shoot better from the field. He's going to fit, you know, pick his spots. But, you know, there's going to be a lot of question marks because, you know, you do have Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris who are also here too. And, you know, that was the problem. It almost seemed like sometimes Harden was, like, deferring to those guys in terms of, you know, taking shots in the fourth quarter. I mean, he took two shots in the fourth quarter of a closeout game at home. I, like, that was what was blowing my mind. I know they were down by a little bit, but, like, that's pretty much what Ben was doing at this point of the season. And at least you're getting more, you know, in terms of you got more from Harden. But, like, when it came down to it, he wasn't being aggressive in the biggest moment of the year. And, you know, Joel was pretty much getting triple teamed off the ball. So, like, that's where you need a guy like James Harden to really step in. And maybe Maxey can be that guy. And, you know, maybe. But you sign James Harden, you're giving him $47 million next year, you know, that he'll accept probably to be that guy. And if he's not, then, you know, I think there's, you know, got to ask questions about it. You know, obviously Joel Embiid is your guy, but, you know, we've seen, you know, what was Milwaukee's downfall against Boston? I think it was not having Chris Middleton. You know, that was, I think they pretty much win that series if Middleton plays. But
I agree.
You see Boston having two dogs in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown who were able to overcome that. You need those two stars. And if Harden isn't going to be that offensively, you know, and he's already a liability defensively, it's just, there's questions to be raised, is all I'm saying.
Absolutely. It was disappointing. It's frustrating because everyone saw how good James Harden was 2-3 years ago, and we're all just wanting that guy, and he's just not that guy. It's frustrating.
Yeah, but even last year, he was better than what we're seeing now. I mean, at least last year, he was shooting 47%.
I mean, at some point, you got to kind of question how much he cares. I mean, I know nothing about that, but it's just like, I know he's a hard worker. I mean, I've seen him, like, in years past when he was in Houston. I know he's in the gym lifting after games. He's getting shots up after games. I know he works hard, but in that second half of that game, he's passing the ball up after he would dribble the ball up, pass it off to the wing, and he'd run to the corner or wherever he was. And he didn't look like he wanted the ball back.
Exactly.
He looked like he was good with whatever happened. And you like to see a little bit more fight.
And you saw it in the series, though, even game four. That game might have been one of the best second halves I've seen from Harden in terms of playoff performances.
Absolutely.
So, like, where's that guy consistently?
Exactly.
And I think
that's
where the questions come in.
Exactly.
Especially about, you know, just his want for it.
Exactly.
But, you know, that's why, you know, if they can tailor it a little bit more to him, I hope he, you know, maybe takes his body more seriously this year and, you know, goes through. You saw what Joel's been doing. You know, his conditioning's at an all-time high.
And at the end of the day, we played with a Joel Embiid who maybe was 50%. Every time he was shooting the ball, he was shooting it differently because of his thumb. You could see him pushing the ball forward. The ball wasn't even coming off of his hand how it typically does. Like, I'm not, like, yes, I am making excuses, but at the same, like, that's a valid thing. He was not even close to 100%.
They were saying
healthy.
That his thumb was,
like,
probably the worst injury he had, you know, on top of the orbital fracture and all that.
Concussion, like, I just wish, like, if we lost with him 100%, then
it's a little easier
that
to stinks. Swallow.
But, yeah, he's our best player, MVP candidate, isn't even healthy. Like, it just sucks.
And that's the curse of Joel Embiid, you might say, too. You know, he's always going to be in the lineup, but, you know, some of these nicks and some of these nooks or nicks that he takes up throughout the season, you know, might be an impact there. And that's, you know, again, we keep coming back to it, but that's where you need a guy like James Harden to really step up. And, you know, another thing that was really an issue was the depth. Honestly, that came back to bite them in the Miami series especially. They didn't really have to worry about it too much against Toronto because Joel Embiid was just so good.
George's Niang was horrible.
Yep.
Danny Green was hot or cold. Obviously, I'm a big Danny Green guy.
He had a great series against Miami.
But he did have a couple bad ones, a couple duds in Miami in games one and two.
That's true.
Maybe one of those two games.
Yeah, you're right. Both of them.
I mean, Paul Reed, you gotta love the guy, but like, he got cooked a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, a little bit. He makes up for it with hustle plays. He tries. But he can't be your backup center if you're looking to win the finals.
Exactly.
He can't.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, we just don't have any.
Yeah, so
we have no scoring off of the bench. No.
You're going to have to find a starter to fill in there. And this is what, you know, obviously, some of the stuff about the depth, which you just kind of brought up, Niang. I mean, he's an unrestricted free agent after this year.
I like him, but he was bad.
And if he's your best bench piece, then you know you're going to have some issues. I mean, Korkmaz, you're paying $5 million over the next 2 years each. Not even really playing. It's like, you can get more for your bucks there. Obviously, the Danny Green injury is tough. You know, he was a big. And you saw it last year against Atlanta, him leaving the lineup. You know, it was big because he's a vet with playoff experience. Like,
too wet.
Exactly. You know, he looks like he's running around with one leg out there. But, like, you know, $10 million is going to be coming off the book. He's got a non-guaranteed $10 million hit this year. So they're probably going to take that away with the injury, or he'll go on IR or something and they'll get the money back. They'll get hardship exemption. But, you know, I think, you know what, another big piece of this comes down to Matisse Thybul. And you need to determine whether or not he's your guy for the future or not. Because I think at the end of the day, he's going to be asked to step into the starting lineup as he was this year. And
so I'll pose a question to you about him. I
give
don't
me
mean
the
to
question.
Cut you off.
No, give me.
I was talking about this with my brother the other day. Like, I love his defense, don't get me wrong. But I don't want the guy within 10 feet of the basketball.
Exactly.
Are we better off the way our team's built? Like, would you rather have Matisse Thybul, or I don't have a great comp right now, but like, or would you rather have the opposite? Like, are we better off getting a guy who just plays good offense and replacing him? Like, is Matisse's defense that, like, is he saving more baskets than a good offensive player is getting us, but in that same position who might get scored on a couple times? Like,
yeah, but at the same time, you know, he's also, it's just, you'll be able to find a guy who might not be as good offensively as Matisse is defensively, but he'll be better, you know, he'll be like, better at what Matisse is bad at. Like, let's say Matisse is bad at offense. I think you could find someone who would be not as bad defensively as Matisse is on offense, if that makes sense.
Exactly.
You know, like, you could flip that and get an offensive guy.
Who can still play a little bit of defense.
Who's still
going to
play a little bit of defense. And that's
exactly.
What I think you got to figure out.
Exactly.
Because you're going to have Danny Green. You know, you got to figure out Matisse. If you can trade him, I mean, you know, he's been
What's
off the
his
table
trade
so
value?
It's taken a hit. It flat out.
Exactly.
Taken,
I'd rather move him. Like,
after being second team all defense last year, I believe.
He's not going to be this
now,
year.
He's not going to be. And that's just, you know, it's just tough because he's shooting 45% from the field, 28% from three. It's like 33% from the free throw line in the playoffs. Like, I know he wasn't going to the line a bunch, but like, if, you know, he was a first-round pick from the Sixers. Like, he's under contract at least this year. He's got he's a restricted free agent next year, so you're probably going to bring him back. And it's like,
I'm trying to think.
Is he a starter or like a long-term thing? Because he's not a, you know, a defensive specialist off the bench is not as valuable as like, it may seem to be. I mean, maybe it's a guy.
He's not as good as Andre Roberson. He's a worse Andre Roberson.
I guess so. At least Roberson hit some shots.
Exactly.
Every now and then. I mean, he's hit a couple shots, but like, he just doesn't know where to be. Like, he's honestly not as physical. Like, he's more of a guard defender, I feel like.
Yeah.
He can guard wings, but he gets like, he could be out physical, like, or like, I don't know if that's even a word, but
bullies.
He could be overpowered in the paint or like in the post, whereas like, you could get a bigger guy that's also 6'6 or 6'7 to run that three who can hold his own in the post. Because you're going to have Maxey and Harden, you know, moving around on the perimeter. Like, you got to have someone that can defend inside.
I'm trying to
bit.
Think of a player, like, to say, would you trade him for?
The perfect player in that position is Mikal Bridges, but we'll never have that back. So
that was Zaire Smith.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, but that's the guy you need, which is tough to find. It's what everybody wants in the NBA, but like, there's guys you could find that are like that. I mean, there's guys around.
I guess it's like,
for.
I don't even know.
I can't think of a name off the top of my head, but you just got to determine whether he's going to be a long-term piece because it doesn't really seem like he is. Now with Danny Green leaving, more than likely, like.
All right, I got names for you then.
Okay.
Free agents. Can we move on to that?
Yeah.
All right. I'm just going to rattle them off. Gary Harris. Don't know what he's going to go for, but...
Yeah, I mean, but it's going to come down to what, like, cost you have. And I don't know how much...
He's not going to cost a ton.
They're way over. Like, they're going to have to deal Toby. They're going to have to, like, cut Danny off the books.
Joe,
like,
Ingles.
Joe's cool.
He knows how to play.
Yeah.
And he can shoot.
He can hold
TJ Warren. I've wanted us to trade for TJ Warren for the past 2 years.
But does Matisse get you any of these guys?
They're free agents.
All of them are free agents?
Yeah, these guys.
Okay.
TJ Warren, I would trade Matisse for.
Yeah, I'd trade Well, yeah.
But we don't have to because he's a free agent. DeLon Wright.
He's more of a guard, isn't he?
Yeah.
You can't play him, though, with Harden and Maxey. That's the problem.
No, he's a backup
guard.
You
need a bigger player than Matisse.
Otto Porter.
Otto is a great fit.
Yeah, and I wanted him last
year. But he's
year.
Hurt. Like, he's not a starter. He's a bench player.
Chris Boucher.
Boucher's fine.
He can shoot it and defend.
Yeah, but he's going to come off the bench.
Yeah. And Connaughton. Toby needs to play Pat Connaughton. He's a restricted, I think.
Yeah, he's like a two. I don't know. He could play the three, I guess.
I don't know. I just... Daryl will figure something out, but...
You need to find that wing... Because Toby needs to play the four. So you're going to have to find a wing of some kind to fill in there. And someone that can give you offense. That's all. At the end of the day, Joel Embiid being on the court is going to affect your defense so much that in a starting unit, you can afford to let some go with Matisse. Now, off the bench, you know, that's where I think you find a defense-first center that, like, can really, you know, does his own thing. And then you find some more, like, offense and everything, which I know it's easy to say, but, like... I think you got to sacrifice some defense in the grand scheme of things. And maybe bring in other guys off the street that are better defensively or, you know, switch it up. But I just don't know if Matisse, you know, he'll go somewhere and he'll be great defensively. No, he'll flourish if he gets more minutes. If he goes to Sacramento, he could be second team all defense, first team all defense maybe. But, like, his offense
give us
for
Buddy
a championship
Heald.
Team.
We'll ship him Matisse.
He's on Indiana now.
Oh, yeah.
That was a great trade for... Then they got Halliburton and Buddy Hield in that deal for Sabonis.
Yeah, that was a good deal.
And so, I mean, you know, maybe if they want to ship him, maybe. I take Buddy.
Same.
But, you know, I think it just comes down to that. So depth is going to be a major question mark going into the offseason. Another one, which is, you know, the door's not necessarily slammed on this guy getting the axe, but there was definitely some rumblings of Doc Rivers potentially losing his job. You know... I will give him some credit for making the change to Danny Green in the starting rotation. You know, I will give him some credit for some of the things that he's made, some of the changes he did. Sitting DeAndre Jordan down and putting Paul Reed in once Joel came back and just playing Paul Reed as the backup center and DeAndre Jordan. I like that. At least he realized after time that DeAndre Jordan can't jump over a credit card anymore. And, you know, I think it was a good call by him. That being said, you know, it just comes down to, is the grass greener on the other side? Is the guy changing up your continuity, getting a new voice, is it worth it to get rid of Doc Rivers and ruin the, you know, the flow he's built up, the coordination he's built up? Is it worth it to get rid of him when, you know, you got to find someone new to come into?
I mean, listen, I don't think Doc Rivers... I mean, obviously, this team isn't a championship team, so let's just get that out of the way right away. But he's not a championship coach for this team either. Obviously, players need to be brought in. Players need to be moved before we can even think about making it to a championship. But I don't think he's the right guy. I agree with what you said. I mean, he made some nice changes. Like, he put Danny in the lineup. He'd let Paul Reed play as the backup five. That's all well and good. But I thought we brought Doc in because he was going to command the respect of the players. He had superstars' respect.
Sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
And I thought we brought him in because he had championship pedigree and... he was going to motivate our players. I thought that's what Brett Brown couldn't do. I thought Brett Brown couldn't motivate.
I thought
that's why Brett Brown had to leave, because he was bad with X's and O's and he couldn't motivate the players. And when I said that the players need to be self-motivated, I got told that it's the coach's job to motivate people.
Yeah, it is. It's a part of the
Doc
job.
Doc didn't motivate them. I see him in the huddle on TV, mic'd up. Come on, guys. Come on. Good job, Doc.
Yeah.
Good job. Good job. They're really going. I mean, Embiid's got Joel his face in his
Joel
hands.
Joel said it. It's only so much a coach or a GM can do. It comes down to the
players.
But, you know, Doc, I thought, got brought in to deal with big personalities is what I thought he came in to deal with in terms of Ben Simmons and, you know, Joel Embiid locker
room. And look what he did. He ran Ben Simmons out of Philly. I'm not saying it's Doc's fault
because
it's not. Ben Simmons ran himself out of Philly. But my point is, if you're saying he came in to manage egos, Ben...
It's not like he's
Ben
a great
fizzled out.
Mind.
Ben
like,
fizzled out under his tenure, and Embiid is probably the easiest superstar to deal with. The guy just wants to go out and play basketball and make fun of people. He doesn't care who his coach is. He's going to go do the same thing.
Yeah.
And James Harden, honestly, doesn't really cause that much drama either.
No, he
like,
just does his thing. But...
So like, he didn't really. I don't know. Like. We brought him in to deal with who then? Ben Simmons?
Yeah.
And how did that work?
Well, you didn't know you were trading Ben Simmons when you bring in Doc.
Exactly. My point is, if you brought him in to manage egos, clearly he didn't do a great job of it. He couldn't even go on the stand and talk Ben Simmons.
I also think it's a little different circumstance in terms of Ben Simmons. I don't know.
I do not like Ben Simmons whatsoever, but like, I don't know. What is Doc doing? Like, I don't know. There's a very few handful of coaches in the NBA that are really
had a great time out
really
of game three against Toronto
good.
That saved the Joel shot that got him ready. That's a good call.
That's his best time out of his career. I said it right when it happened. I said that's the best time out Doc Rivers ever called in this whole career.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's you know, he made some wrong decisions, but the
in
fact
game,
is he's
yeah.
been around for so
that's
long
fine.
That I think it's worth it just keeping him at this point.
Yeah,
you know, I don't think
it's fine.
I don't know who you would bring in. Like, I don't want to bring Mike D'Antoni in, I'll tell you that
no,
much.
Me
like,
either.
You're going to have to bring someone in where you know they're going to change, you know.
Bring in it, like, I wish our front office had some sense to it before Daryl came, and we keep Ime Udoka. I mean, he's an assistant coach on our team.
Or Monty Williams,
ago.
2 years ago.
We've got
Monty Williams, Ime Udoka.
I might rather have Sam Cassell. Maybe, who, for all we know, Sam Cassell is a great coach. He might be. I don't know if he is or not, but, like... We should be able to identify those kind of things. Like, we need someone in our front office to say, hey, this guy on our coaching staff this defensive coordinator is a beast. Like, he works hard. His defensive
stuff
works.
And I thought Monty was that guy.
Exactly.
I just thought it was going to be
exactly.
a clean,
like,
you know, transition.
I would rather have
him. I didn't know much about Ime Udoka, honestly. But he looks like a stud.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
He's got him in the Eastern Conference Finals.
I'd rather have him than Doc right now.
Yeah.
If you put Doc Rivers as the coach of that Celtics team and Udoka as the coach of our team,
you really think that the Sixers are there and the Celtics aren't?
No. I think the Celtics definitely aren't there with Doc Rivers as their coach. No doubt. Did you see how Tatum and Brown were playing just last year with Brad Stevens, who I think is a better coach? That maybe he's not, but who, like...
Yeah,
I
don't know.
I don't know if I trust Doc to get
Tatum's also better. I mean, maybe
he's playing
maybe
unselfishishly bought into what they're trying to do. I don't think Doc's getting them to do that. He's probably letting Tatum and Brown go every time down the floor.
I mean, Joel also has flourished in his own right under Doc, pretty much. He's had two MVP seasons under him, you know. You know, I'm just saying, it kind of goes either way, determined of what you want to talk about there. But.
I just don't think the Celtics are where they are if Doc's their coach. Have you seen them on defense?
They look phenomenal on defense.
Yeah.
You know, I also think Doc's probably a better defensive coach than an offensive coach, but, you know, that's just, you know, what I'm thinking. So, you know, at the end of the day, it sounds like he's going to end up being back, so...
Yep.
We're going to see. I think the team's going to look very similar going into next year. I think they're going to try to pick up a couple players on the margins. But outside of that, it's going to be, can James Harden and Joel Embiid be the duo that does it? Because if not, you're better off trading James Harden. I mean, he's probably going to re-sign this summer at some contract, which he should take less money. But that's a conversation for another day with James Harden. But overall, ended up losing in the second round again. So you know they're not a championship contender right now in
this
your eyes?
Roster?
Yeah,
no. We just talked about the depth off the bench being Georges Niang, Furkan Korkmaz, Paul Reed.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, no.
All right. But we'll see what happens. Also, another little side note in the Ben Simmons, James Harden deal. Brooklyn had the right to defer the Sixers' first-round selection this year if they wanted to next year, and it looks like they may do that. So the Sixers may have the number 23 overall pick, depending on if that matters or not for a championship team. You know, we'll see what ends up happening there. But that'll kind of wrap up our talk with the Sixers today. We're going to move on to the Philadelphia Eagles now, because the draft was a couple weeks ago and the Birds made a bunch of splashes, honestly. And, you know, based on talking to or listening to a lot of people talk about the NFL draft, the Eagles ended up being a winner in a lot of people's eyes in terms of what they did and what they acquired on draft night. So just kind of going through it, I did want to touch on each pick that the Birds made, as well as what they did with each pick. So I guess we'll just kind of go in chronological order here and start with the first pick. The Eagles traded up to number 13 to select defensive tackle from Georgia, Jordan Davis. An absolute freak athlete, 6'6", 340. I think he ran a 4.9 40 at the combine. Just athletically, like a 99 percentile athlete. Unbelievable measurables. And was named the best defensive lineman in college football last year. Just an outstanding year, an outstanding athlete. You know, this pick did get a little bit of heat. You know, a couple things that people were noting was the lack of productivity in college was mainly known as just a run stuffer. You know, a player that's going to play first and second down and, you know, really stop the run, alter the run there. You know, his motor was also in question with, you know, taking some plays off. There was also the concern that, you know, the cost to move up from number 15 to number 13 was a little too steep. I believe we gave up a fifth and 2/6, or a sixth and 2/7. I'm not sure exactly the price there, but it was, I think it was a fifth and 2/6. So not too much, but you ended up trading four picks to move up to 13 and take Jordan Davis. So an interesting kind of discussion to be had there. But overall, with the pick, I think the fit and the filling of a need justifies the selection here to move up and to take him 13. You know, Roseman has always been a guy that's a build-through-the-line guy, always going to take the defensive or offensive lineman. And I was watching his interview on the Rich Eisen show recently, and he was saying that if it's a 50-50 call, like a coin flip on two different players, you know, they're just going to go with the lineman, either offensive or defensive tackle. So, you know, whether it was Kyle Hamilton, who was on the board, who went 14, you know, whether it was between those two, they're going to always go for the defensive lineman. So overall, I love the move. You know, Fletcher Cox is getting up there. You know, Javon Hargrave, I think, is on the last year of his deal. They have Milton Williams, who they took last year, who had a great rookie year. So, you know, you're really just building on that depth and making it a strength of your team. And you know, one of the things that was, you know, tough about the Eagles last year is their running defense was not good. And, you know, if Jordan Davis, you know, sheds a little bit of LBs, is able to play more than, you know, 50% of plays, you know, I think he could really be a home run pick for the Birds. And, you know, I think, you know, a defensive tackle is never a sexy pick. But, you know, I think it was a good use of the asset of the number 13 pick and, you know, the other picks to trade up to it.
I agree. I mean, I don't. You know, I'm not a big college football guy. I don't follow a ton during the season. I really kind of start to learn about the prospects leading up to the NFL draft. Didn't know much about Jordan Davis, but everything I've read, everything I've heard is the guy looks like a stud. Hopefully he can learn from Fletcher Cox and the veterans we have on the defensive line, and they can help him turn into a hit of a first-round pick. I think the connection with him and N'Kobe Dean, who I'm sure we're going to get into in a couple minutes, is also something I like. I mean, I'm glad we're taking SEC defensive linemen.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want Washington. I don't want Washington. I don't want Pac-12. I don't want Big 12.
That's my whole thing.
I want SEC players. So
it's
I'm
like
happy.
The best players from the
I'm
best
happy
teams.
With that, too.
Yeah, yep. We did that last year with Landon Dickerson and Devontae Smith from the national champion winning Alabama Crimson Tide. Let's take another guy from one of the greatest all-time defenses. You know, say what you will about the schedule, whatever the case may be, but Georgia was an all-time defense, ended up winning the national championship. I love taking, you know, the best defensive lineman on the best defensive team in the country. So great move for me there. I love that pick. Now moving on to arguably the biggest splash of the night out of any team in the draft. This was day one during the first round. The Eagles were up again on 18, number 18 overall. They acquired this pick in the deal with the New Orleans Saints. They traded 18, though, and they also traded their third-round pick, which was number 101, to Tennessee. And in return, they acquired wide receiver A.J. Brown and subsequently signed him or re-signed him to a four-year, $100 million deal. Just a blockbuster of a deal for the Eagles. I was, you know, we took Jordan Davis, and I was with Connor that night on draft night, and you know, we were expecting us to trade out of 18. We even said, once we had two picks, I was telling them, I think, you know, defensive line, and then we're going to trade the second pick, or offensive line, we're going to trade the second pick. There wasn't too many offensive linemen, you know, in the range we were at, so I was feeling more defensive, and they ended up trading the pick. It just said, Philadelphia, trade the pick, and I was like, we're out of the pick, you know. We're trading it, so we'll see what happens. But we kind of thought the night was over. And then we go up, and Schefter's coming on the screen telling us we got A.J. Brown in the deal, and you know, what went from a really good night just went to a great night overall.
Yep.
Just a home run pick for me. You know, the Eagles have had a tough time drafting and developing wideouts outside of DeVonta Smith the last couple of years. I mean, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside in the second round, Jalen Reagor the year after that. Thankfully, we hit on DeVonta Smith. So, you know, getting a proven guy that's been in the league for a couple of years has been arguably one of the best wide receivers in the league in that time frame. It's just a home run for me. What do you think the A.J. Brown acquisition is going to do for the offense in general as a whole? You know, you can talk on Jalen Hurts if you want. What do you think this is going to kind of do for the Eagles' offense?
Hopefully it's going to open a lot of things up. I mean, we now have two guys on the outside who you just really have to respect. I mean, defenses can't just trot out four defensive backs and feel comfortable against us, right? Like, maybe in the past couple years,
they
feel
AJ
fine
Brown,
with two corners. They might even just have one safety deep, and they might stuff the box on first and 10 because they know it's either going to DeVonta, Goddard, or it's a handoff. So they have those guys on lockdown, and they pack the box with six, seven guys, and it's going to be a lot tougher to do that. So that's the number one thing I'm looking forward to. We should hopefully have some more space, some more running lanes for guys like Miles. And then moving off of that, obviously it's going to help. I really hope it helps DeVonta. I want him to get more targets than he did last year. I know we didn't throw the ball a ton as we were winning games in the second half of the season. We kind of got hot, and it was because we were running the football 30 times a game. So I'm not mad about that. But at the same time, I need DeVonta to see at least like 8 targets a game, like minimum. So if they're each seeing 8 to 10 targets a game, you sprinkle in 6 to 8 with Goddard, like, and then Quez, like, and whoever else is in there. But it should hopefully open up a lot of things for our offense. My biggest thing is I just hope the guy stays on the field. I know he's got some injury history,
both of his legs,
like his knees, I think, which kind of scare me a little bit. But knock on wood,
such a physical runner.
Knock on wood, everything's going to be all right. And as long as he's on the field, he's going to hopefully help our offense go to a new level.
Yeah, I'm just so excited because I think it kind of knocks everyone back down into their position of better fit, if you will. I guess that doesn't really make sense, but you know, DeVonta is the beast. I just don't know if he's that number one alpha X receiver in your offense, and him moving down to that Z guy, that other side facing number two corners, like you said, like a lot of people love the film on DeVonta Smith. I was listening to one podcast, or they had Greg Cosell on, and he was talking to all these guys in the league, and they were just loving the film DeVonta Smith put out last year. And he looked great and, you know, wasn't really targeted that much, honestly. You know, his best game was against Denver, where he had 4 or 5 catches, mossed somebody in the end zone, had 2 touchdowns, and, you know, looked good. You know, he can really change the game. A game against the Chargers we had, where we could have beaten the Chargers at home. You know, he had 100 yards and a touchdown, made big catches, down-the-field catches, but now having that guy in A.J. Brown that's going to command double teams, the whole defense is going to shift that way. And then this was another thing that they mentioned, too, that I loved. One of the things that DeVonta Smith was so good at Alabama, and we talked about this when he was drafted, was using him in motion. And, like, they would run him in motion to one side and then the other side and just getting a cornerback off from, like, jamming him at the line. Like, getting him moving before the snap. That way he can use his quickness to get off of cornerbacks. And now that A.J. Brown's locked in as that number one guy, he can just go stand out there and DeVonta can run around and do his thing. I think that's only going to help him. It's only going to help Jalen Hurts because he's going to be able to read the defense before the snap. You know, I just think as long as he stays healthy, like you said, that's going to be the biggest thing. But, you know, you got an offensive line playing at an elite level. You got a running game playing at an elite level. And then you got a number one wide receiver that's going to make Jalen Hurts' life easier. And, you know, Jalen Hurts was arguably the reason this happened because he's on his rookie deal right now, which makes it possible for the Eagles to even sign him to a $100 million deal because, you know, the Tennessee's paying Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry both a lot of money to be on the team. They're also paying some defensive linemen a lot of money. So a $100 million wide receiver just didn't fit into their budget. And we saw it this year with Devontae Adams, with Tyreek Hill just setting a new market for wide receiver money. So they knew that they weren't going to pay him because they did know what they had in A.J. Brown, and that is a stud wide receiver. So overall, A-plus for A.J. Brown. We love that pick. And he's going to be an absolute stud in Philadelphia. Next pick we made was in the second round, and this had N'Kobe Dean for me written all over it. I was so excited to take him. He fell all the way to 51. But instead of that, we took center Cam Jurgens. And this kind of brings me back to what I said when we were talking about Jordan Davis. If it comes down to an offensive or defensive lineman and another position, Howie Roseman has proven that he's going to go with the offensive lineman. If it's like a 50-50 call, if the prospects are similar on their board. And that was Cam Jurgens. Jason Kelsey, I'm sure, I don't know if you saw the video. He was on something for Bleacher Report with the one host from TMT. Who's the guy that does Adam Lefkoe?
Yeah.
He was on with Adam Lefkoe, and we drafted the center, and he was live when that pick came out. And, you know, they thought it was going to be, like, awkward with Kelsey, but he was like, no, like, the Eagles have had me help, scout centers for the last couple drafts. And he was like, Jurgens is easily my favorite. You know, I'm just excited to get him in here and, you know, see what he can do and everything. And honestly, it's setting up as for Kelsey's last year with this pick. This is what this told me. We could have taken a center. I mean, we did in Landon Dickerson last year, but he almost looks better at guard. So we're probably going to leave him there.
Yep.
And this pretty much tells me that this is Kelsey's last year. Jurgens is going to get grandfathered into that center's position. And it's pretty much the same player as him. So I guess just another offensive lineman, you know, building the depth. You know, I know we've given Howie Roseman his flack in terms of, you know, his drafting and some of the trades he's made. But, you know, focusing on the offensive and defensive line, I think, have been big things. So I don't really think there's too much to break down in terms of that. But I did want to talk about our next pick in the third round. And this is where N'Kobe Dean did go. He fell all the way to 83rd overall in the third round.
Can't believe it.
Unreal value. So many experts had him in their top 32 overall prospects. So he should have been a first-round pick. You know, we were talking about this all the time last year, Con. What do you think a linebacker like Dean is going to be able to do for the defense in Philadelphia? Because we haven't had a linebacker like that in years. You know, what do you think his? I don't know if you've had any chance to, like, I don't know if you said you watched college football or not, but, you know, everything you've seen, read about N'Kobe Dean, what do you think he's going to bring?
I mean, I'll be honest, I knew him and I didn't know who Jordan Davis was. So yeah. Take that with a grain of salt. But I know that he was the leader on that Georgia defense.
He was the mic, yep.
And I think that's exactly the kind of guy we need on our defense.
Linebacker of the year.
We need a linebacker who obviously can stop the run, which I think Dean can do. I know he's not a huge guy, but he's built, he's strong, and I'm pretty sure he was a solid run stopper at Georgia. I think we need a guy who's going to be like that heart and soul of your defense, and that's where I think he's going to be. Apparently, he studies film, watches a ton of film, studies the playbook. I'm pretty sure something came out. They said he studied the Eagles playbook already. He like memorized it in one day or something.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
that's
so
awesome.
He's just, or maybe it was the Georgia playbook when he got there.
Yeah, there was one.
I think that was what
out.
It was.
He knew it like the first week of freshman camp,
and was teaching the other freshmen what the plays were. So like I think that's the kind of guy we need. I know there were some questions with his medicals. I think that's probably why he dropped, but and he didn't choose to participate in a lot of the combine stuff. But, I mean, I love the pick, especially at that value. You can't pass up on that guy for a third time. And hopefully he can stay healthy and lead the defense.
Yep.
That would be awesome.
It's going to be interesting to see what Jonathan Gannon kind of does with the defense in terms of he's going to kind of switch to a 3-4 or 4-3. Because we did sign Kazir White as well, who's going to be a stud. He was a linebacker with the Chargers last year. He's kind of like a weak side linebacker. Also signed Hassan.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I think Kazir White is a stud. I was talking to Rob Makem. I saw him the other day. Shout out Rob. And he was giving me the scoop on him. He's a West Virginia guy.
Yep.
So Rob's seen him play multiple times. He would go to the games all the time. He said that guy's just a true linebacker. He does every single thing. He pass rushes. He stops the run. He defends in coverage. He he's really, really good. Yeah. And he said he thinks he's going to be on the field pretty much every snap. And Rob even said that he thinks Gannon could go with a two linebacker set because Maddox is going to be on the field because he defends. If we could pick up a guy like James Bradbury as our other cornerback, because we do need a second cornerback.
Yeah, he's on the wire.
If
he's
we were to get, like, Maddox is going to be on the field covering the slot. So, like, if we go with two linebackers, it very well could be Kazir White and N'Kobe Dean on the field for a lot of the time. And then you got guys like TJ Edwards and whoever else. But yeah,
we got Hassan Reddick, big Eagle signing from Carolina, who's going to be rushing the passer a lot. Yeah. So that's where I could almost see N'Kobe and Kazir just being the two linebackers that drop into coverage.
Absolutely. And then the other guy is, I think it's Xavion Taylor. He's kind of like a safety-ish. He's kind of a hybrid. He kind of plays all over the field. But I think he can be a... I believe that's his name, Xavion Taylor.
Maybe.
But he can play linebacker, too. And I think he might get a little bit of time at the linebacker position as well.
Okay.
Is that his name?
I'm not sure exactly.
I'll look it up. I think it is.
You find check it out and see what we got going on. But, yeah, just a home run pick, I think, for the Philadelphia Eagles and N'Kobe Dean. You know, he's going to be... He has a chance to really start. You know, they're probably going to go with TJ Edwards if N'Kobe doesn't wow them in training camp, which he definitely has the possibility to wow. You know, like we just said.
Davion Taylor. I believe he got him from the Bills. Yeah.
Okay, like, yeah. At least they're making some constant you're making investments in the in the linebacking position that, you know, they haven't really done too much in the past. So I'm excited. You know, you mentioned James Bradbury. He was cut by the Giants to save a little bit of money. He would be the perfect cornerback, too, outside of Darius Slay. You know, the Eagles still need a safety. That was one thing they didn't address in the draft. And Tyrann Mathieu ended up going to New Orleans, so that was a bummer. You know, hopefully we'll be able to sign someone because Marcus Epps is right now, like, our starter. And maybe Kevon Wallace, because we let McLeod go. So
Anthony Harris.
We'll see what happens. But you know, that's definitely our weak link. But if we can maybe sign Bradbury, sign a safety, I'd be really, really excited for this defense. And I think the Eagles are going to have a legit chance to challenge for the division because I do think the Cowboys got a little worse. I think the Commanders got a little better. And I think the Giants had a great draft as well with Kevon Thibodeau and Evan Neal as their top 7 picks. You know, I think they had a great draft, too. So it's going to be really interesting. I think the NFC East is going to be better this year. But I do think the Eagles have a legit chance to go for the division and really challenge there. So that's going to kind of wrap up our draft talk. We're going to have plenty more coverage of the Birds throughout the summer as camp gets kicked off, as we start hearing reports. You know, if free agent moves happen throughout the year, we're definitely going to talk about the Birds a lot coming up now as the summer gets underway. So... that is going to lead us into the next team we're going to talk about because the summer is almost underway, and that is the Fightins, the Philadelphia Phillies. They recently are coming home from a West Coast trip in which they played the Mariners and the Dodgers. They ended up taking 2 of 3 from the Mariners and 3 of 4 from the Dodgers in just a great series. The offense as a whole popped off, averaged 5.6 runs a game in the series against the Mariners. Averaged 8.25 runs per game against the Dodgers over a 4-game series and looked great. You know, overall takeaways, Connor, for you, just in terms of taking 2 of 3 from the Mariners and 3 of 4 from the Dodgers, what do you make of the trip?
It was awesome. It was great to see the bats come alive on the West Coast. L.A., I guess we like to play in that stadium.
Yeah, apparently it was great weather. It was warm.
Runs.
The ball was flying.
We put up runs in that 4-game set against the Dodgers. It was fun to watch. We honestly probably should have won last night, too.
Yeah, should have won.
And I guess we can't get too greedy. 3 out of 4 from the Dodgers, from the Phillies, as the Phillies is pretty good. But yeah, my biggest takeaway was it was nice to see the bats come to life. But at the same time, the bullpen does not look great. I mean, they're still kind of getting shelled, even when we have big leads.
Yeah,
so.
The bullpen was definitely struggling. The Phillies had to win a couple shootouts against the Dodgers. Just to, you know, get those wins. They won the second game 12-10 after blowing multiple leads. Their game 4, like you mentioned, they were up 4-0 in the second inning, and they had the bases loaded in the top of the second and ended up losing 5-4. So that was another game that was there for the taking. Nola looked pretty good. He was shutting the Dodgers down for a long time. So, you know, overall, I think you had the takeaway that mattered the most. The offense is coming alive. Schwarber's starting to heat up. Gene Segura's on the heater. of his Phillies career right now. He's hitting absolutely phenomenally. And at the center of it all, Bryce Harper, Connor. I mean, the MV3 arguably is in the lead for NL MVP, maybe just behind Manny Machado. But let me just rattle some stats off for you here before I let you go on Bryce, because there were some things that just blew my mind. This one stat was unbelievable. There was no player in the history of Dodger Stadium, and it's been around for 60 years, there's no player, and this might have been visiting player. It's probably visiting player, if I were to, I think, is what the stat said, yeah. So, no visiting player has ever had a home run and multiple extra base hits in three consecutive games as a visitor in Dodger Stadium. And Bryce was on an absolute heater. Homered in the first three games of the year, had doubles in every game, had a couple doubles in one of the games. Like, he's just been going off. He's first in the NL in home runs, doubles, runs, slugging percentage. He's second in the NL in RBI and OPS. I mean, what else is there to say? I mean, obviously Machado is having a fantastic year, but, you know, Bryce looks like he's going to repeat, huh, for MVP?
Yeah, he definitely has a shot if he keeps this pace up. The injury hopefully doesn't affect him.
Small tear in the UCL and his right shoulder.
Thank God that we have the universal DH, because if not, this team is a different team when he's not in the lineup. So we need him in the lineup, and the fact that we're able to keep his bat in it, even though he can't play the field, is massive, especially when he's hitting like this. So, like you said, Machado, there's a couple other guys in the NL. Arenado's having a great start to the year. There's some other guys who are hot, but yeah, if Bryce keeps this up, there's no reason he couldn't win his second straight MVP. Yeah,
I agree. It's just overall looking phenomenally. You said he's getting PRP injection in his right elbow for a small tear in the UCL. So he missed Sunday's game, the one game we lost, surprisingly. And he's probably going to miss maybe the series against the Padres, which is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We're still waiting to see on that. But, you know, he wants to get back out in the field, and he will soon. But like you said, that DH has been phenomenal for our lineup, because having him in there, you know, he's shown he's can be an absolute difference maker. So I did want to swing back, which is the last point here I wanted to talk about, which was the bullpens for the Philadelphia Phillies. I'm trying to pull up some numbers here just in terms of team stats, and in what we're kind of doing with, you know, our bullpen ERA and blown saves and all that, because it's appearing to be our weak link once again. And, you know, we saw Yuri Familia looks like an absolute whiff of a signing. He does not look good. Nebel does look good, though. He's up there in saves in the National League. He is tied for sixth with seven saves in the National League. So someone who is, you know, getting the job done when asked upon or when called upon. And other than that, I don't know, man. There's not too much to be excited about. San Anthony Dominguez looks good. Brad Hand looks all right, I guess. But other than that, I mean, you got a lot of guys who aren't really doing much. Do you think the Phillies are going to be able to overcome this, you know, as a team?
I think we're going to have to look to make at least one move to the bullpen as the season progresses, whether that's calling someone up from the minors, a starter, put Morales in the bullpen, put Adonis Medina in the bullpen, do something. I think we have to spice it up. I would love to see Sir Anthony keep pitching in high leverage situations. I think he's looked great. And
yeah, him and Nebel.
I think when he's on, he's our best reliever. I don't really think it's close, honestly. Two guys who just aren't getting it done are Alvarado, who he just can't throw a strike. I mean, his stuff, he's got nasty stuff. I will never debate that.
My boy, come on now.
He's got nasty stuff. He is erratic. I might as well be throwing up there.
Yeah.
He can't find the zone to save his life. But, he's got a 7-something ERA. He does not look good. Familia's struggled a little bit. I kind of like Familia just because he's got that veteran presence and at least he can find the zone a little bit. So
Every now and then.
I'm not against Familia. I think he's going to bounce back a little bit. But those two really need to step it up. Hand has been solid, honestly. So, like, you get the three of Hand, Dominguez, and Knebel, and they're pitching all right. So if you could get Alvarado and Familia to turn it up a little bit, I mean, I don't have much faith in Alvarado doing it, so we got to find a fourth and fifth reliable guy in the bullpen. So
yeah, and solid. I think that's definitely going to be a position that Dave Dombrowski is going to have to look at the deadline, because it looks like the starters have kind of figured it out. Zach Wheeler's velo is all the way back up, and he looks like that ace again. Nola has looked pretty good throughout the year. Ranger Suarez is looking better and better every start. So, you know, you got those three guys. And then when Eflin, he's coming back from the COVID IL Tuesday or Wednesday, I believe. And then, you know, Kyle Gibson gives you what he gives you. The rotation is going to be there. And the lineup obviously looks like it's starting to come into form as the weather's heating up. So it's going to come down to that bullpen, man. And I'm nervous, but at least there's a clear kind of need that Dombrowski can look at. And maybe look at for the trade deadline coming up. So that is going to wrap up our talk today on the episode. If you want to follow us on social media, check the description below for our handles. I hope you all enjoyed, and I can't wait to see you back here again next time. For Connor, I am your host, Noah Gillian. But hey, this is just one man's opinion.